Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. The show is dedicated to empowering you through an understanding of different paradigms of observation, purpose, and life experiences that people have gone through. The subject matter of what is it that shapes our lives so often comes up. And I can remember being asked at one time, what's more important, Donna, environment or genetics? My feeling is it's a bit of both. But our subject today is a book that is very special. Sherry Matthews is the author. She's with us. The book is titled We Were Not Orphans, and it's stories about a state home in Waco, Texas. Sherry, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Donna, for having me. Thank you.
Well, it's absolutely amazing to me what you were able to put together in this book, and I felt when I was reading it that it was a labor of love, but it was also a very significant collection of stories regarding a time in history that I think is very important. But I want to say when I was reading it, I was thinking about what is going on today and the concerns and problems regarding children during the Dust Bowl days was very bad, but we have problems like that even today. The problems have never really gone away. And
that's
I really
right.
appreciated what you were able to present and the quality of presentation that you have. Now, you're very much an advocacy individual. You have your own advocacy marketing firm. You've won a lot of awards in working with government agencies, nonprofits, and what you describe as socially conscious companies. Now, you yourself live in Texas.
That's
you
right.
You became aware of the Waco State Home when you were 3 years of age. How is it at the age of three that you became aware of this facility?
Well, when I was three, I watched my three older brothers, 5 to age 11, driven away to live there. And so, of course, this was a very traumatic event in my childhood. So I didn't know at the time when they were being taken away at the age of three, you know, where they were going, only that this was a very sad day for my mother and that there was something terribly wrong. As I grew a little older and we went to visit them, which we were allowed to do infrequently, because the superintendent of the Waco State Home, which was a home for dependent children, thought that it was better not to have so much contact with the parents because it made the children unhappy with the home. You know, the attitudes are obviously, first of all, this was a very abusive superintendent, but that was typical of superintendents of children's homes during those years.
Let's talk about the circumstances that brought the Waco State Home into place. How was it established and why?
Well, it was established the first children were admitted in 1923. And, some people said, well, those were kind of the boom times. Well, in Texas, it was beginning not to be. And so the Depression years was when the late 20s and the early 30s is when there were waiting lists of 300, 400, 500 children in a facility that was supposed to hold 300. And they started building more buildings. But the Depression years and then the war years, in the Depression years, many children were eating dirt. Our parents mm-hmm. were so desperate that they would just drive their kids up to a gas station, say, I'll be back to pick you up, and drive off, and the kids never saw them again. I mean, there were stories like that. But mm-hmm. in the war years, if the father went off to war and the mother took a job in one of the factories working, and that happened around Texas, then the children often had no one to take care of them. And so a lot of parents thought that the Waco State Home was this very good facility. It had its own schools. It were considered very good. It was. They had clean beds. They had lots of food. There was a 100-acre farm there and two other 100-acre farms off-site. And so they thought, okay, this is a good place. Some acted as though they thought it was some kind of desirable boarding school. I mean, I've seen letters mm-hmm. that indicated that aunts and uncles were inquiring and were made to think that, oh, they're getting a fabulous education here, and this is a great place for kids. And then, you know, the 50s and the 60s. In the 60s, children came in, and it was closed in the 79 as a result of a Judge William Wayne Justice, who was an incredible federal district judge in Texas. And he ruled, you know, that children, that juveniles had rights to. And he was really targeting it toward juveniles in penal institutions, kids mm-hmm. between the ages of 11 and 17. But the fallout of that ruling, which went through the courts for years, was that any child incarcerated in any kind of institution had rights. And they had rights to, you know, certain amount of individual freedom, to a good education, so forth, and non-abusive treatment. And so in the sweep of getting rid of and closing down some of the really abusive facilities in Texas, the Waco State Home was among those that was identified and was closed in 79.
In your book, you were telling, you know, and you have the stories of people who are now obviously adults, many of them that are elderly at this time.
Right, 60s, and, 70s, 80 years old. Yeah, some are mid-80s.
Right. So here are these individuals that were willing to share stories with you. Now, you went to a reunion.
Yes. I had, when my brothers got out of the home after 5 or 6 years, the first one got out in 5, and then the mother, and he said, "Mother, you know, get Jack and Bing out. It's not a good place." And that's all I heard. Mm-hmm. So Mother worked through the court. She'd been trying, and so she was obviously determined that she really needed to. So they came home, never said a story about the home, nothing. It was as though mm-hmm. it had never happened. It was as though there was this horrible tragedy in the family. It was very painful and humiliating to my mother. She had remarried. You know, we lived in a nice two-story Victorian house in a little town of 3,000 people. The stepfather worked for the railroad. It was just a kind of a life like most of the other kids in the town. And so here, so my brother stepped back into Teague, where they had left those years before from the farm. And we just went on as though the traumatic experience didn't even merit a single story. Mm-hmm. And so after my mother died about 30 years ago, I guess it was maybe about 15 years ago, my brother mentioned that he was going to reunions, and the other brothers died, and Bing kept then began to ask me to go. Well, I didn't want to go because I thought it would be too painful. I just thought, I can't do this, and I don't know why he wants to go, because he said it was miserable being there. That's all I ever heard. Mm-hmm. So finally, I decided to go, that this is something I needed to understand about my brother and that I would understand him better, which is absolutely true. And I went, and I fell in love with the alumni. There were 250 members, but I didn't know that at the time because there were only about 40 or 50 there that day. But I was so thrilled to hear their stories as we walked the grounds of the Waco State Home. And they told me stories of my gifted artist brother and the room where he painted. And people were telling me stories about my brothers. And, of course, I'd never heard any stories. And I was thrilled. And I thought, and they told me stories about themselves, about happy stories, about meeting a sweetheart down by the creek, or homemade Sunday ice cream, homemade ice cream on Sundays, and beating the better equipped, bigger school in a football championship. And I just thought, these are stories that should be saved, because no one seemed to have been able to collect stories from children or adults who grew up in a children's home, because you can't access them. Usually mm-hmm. they don't have alumni association. If they do, you know, those who were there have mixed feelings about writing stories or publishing. There have been books written by people who grew up in homes around the country, but it's usually an individual writing about his or her experience. It's not mm-hmm. a collection of nearly 60 stories over almost 50 years, almost 60 years, actually. The first story is 1924, and the last one is 1976. But I decided that I would publish a collection of their stories as a gift to them. And they were all thrilled. People started calling. We started interviewing, taping their stories, helping them get them written. It was pretty obvious that there were a few who submitted their own stories and their own, you know, that they had written themselves. And we edited a little bit. But most of them were not writers and not comfortable, but they loved to talk to us and, mm-hmm. and would share their stories in an interview. And then we adapted those into their first-person stories, and we made sure they signed off on it, and that was what they felt was representative of what they wanted to say. But as stories started coming in about the abuse and horrible sexual molestations, bloody beatings with a baseball bat, this one particular man who was there, C.B. Wiggum, who was there for 20 years, on and off, fired at least a couple of times, beaten up by the kids themselves twice because he was so horrible. They finally just couldn't stand it any longer. And I was devastated because then I felt that I knew the truth about the home was, and that is why I never heard stories from my brothers. And my living brother still refuses to talk about anything that happened to him there. Mm-hmm. He, you know, and I think in some ways they were sparing us. And I don't know, people have different attitudes about whether they would talk about what happened. The alumni in the book, their families, their children are tell me all the time how grateful they are to me and how it's changed the relationship within the family or even with spouses, the fact that they're talking about what happened to them. Because some of them told their stories to us for the first time. They never told anybody, mm-hmm. not spouses, not children. But then there are others who at a recent reunion said to me, I will never be able to talk to anyone about what happened to me there. Mm-hmm. I just get upset and started to cry. And this is a man in his 70s. Mm-hmm. And so I know how powerful the stories are and how heroic it was for the people who were willing to share their stories. And women, one of the women, Linda Cooey Weeks, has been on television and made appearances with me talking about being sexually assaulted at the home. Mm-hmm. And she talks about how she, because of her religious views, that she has forgiven the person. And that she, you know, when she looks at her little 3- and 4-year-old grandchild, she says that, you know, I see this child and think that's the innocent child that I was when this happened to me. And she's able to talk about it. She says she talks about it in Sunday school classes and stuff. Mm-hmm. So some people have used the experience. As one alumni said, you can either take this and you can make you strong, or you can take this experience and it can damage you for life.
You become
and there
addicted.
Are those who lived on the streets who ended up in prison. There are those who are in mental hospitals still. And so everyone wasn't a survivor.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think that's true, you know, in any population. So, but there are so many highly successful, very honest people who love their children, people who say, no one ever hugged me or told me that they loved me when I was growing up in the Waco State Home. And I didn't get that from my parents before I got there. But I have children now in their 60s. This is somebody who's in his 80s. And he says, but there's not a day that goes by that I don't call my children and tell them that I love them.
What
a
powerful story that is.
So a lot of people, you know, I mean, the stories are just, they're heartwarming, they're funny, they have funny pranks that they played and things that they like to do. Some of them who would retaliate against an abusive staff member, they would find little ways to play tricks on them. And then there are, of course, the just wrenching stories of abuse and abandonment. If you look on the website, there's Roy Duro who describes as a little kid, his brother and sister had already been taken to the home, and he was too young. And so when he got of age, an aunt or uncle took him in a car and said, we're going to go visit your brothers and sisters. So he goes to visit, and then they drive off and leave him standing in the middle of the road. And he said he didn't know why they left him. So he sat there and he said, I cried.
Mm-hmm. Sherry, as you were going through these stories,
And there's so many wonderful stories in here. You have stories of people that are very grateful for the school because they said without it, they wouldn't have had any kind of a life. Because, again, we're talking about a time frame when the population in general was destitute. We really are talking about stories of people, the families, not really having any options, mothers, in a time when having a career wasn't even something that was supported.
Right.
Most of the people were not that well educated. And it is a story that I think is so powerful. The book itself is so powerful because it emphasizes how important it is to have literacy, that facilities sometimes are created because of a need. And as I mentioned when we first started, here in Tacoma, Washington, in the Seattle area, with economic times that have evolved, I know a judge, and that judge told me stories about children being dropped off, just like what you're saying right now, that occurred at this Waco State facility. They're being dropped off at juvenile hall and just left because the families cannot afford to feed them. She said, we are not dealing with juvenile delinquents. We're not, this is not the case. These kids are being dumped by their families. Just the way people often dump their animals when they can't afford them anymore at a humane society.
Right.
Here in our state, this is going on right now. So,
well, that's
this,
why it's so
this is
important.
Just amazing.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's so important when we look at what are we going to fund. You know, I mean, I don't want to get political on your show, but clearly it's important that we remind those who are in positions of power and our elected officials, that if we do not do something to provide for our children who are in need or are disadvantaged or at risk somehow, they are the people, they're the kids who end up in the prisons tomorrow. And it's tragic. Many of the kids in the Waco State home who, by abusive superintendent, if they talked about the abuse, they were sent to Gatesville, the reformatory. And I've followed the records, and all of this is, some of this is in the epilogue of the book, the documents I found documenting even worse abuse than some, many of them would tell me. And they ended up, Gatesville are the reformatories, which are the juvenile penal institutions in America today. That's the training ground for the adult prison. That's very often where they end up. You see it again and again and again. And, again, it has to do with this, what I call the prejudice against poverty, and it happens at all levels. It's though if a child is poor, that's a throwaway kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the family, a child coming from a cycle of poverty is so horribly disadvantaged. And so if someone doesn't step in and intervene and say, I'm going to mentor this child, I'm going to help them find a job, I'm going to help them get scholarships to college, I'm going to make a difference. The kids who did so well in the Waco State home often had a staff member who took a special interest in him or her, but often it was a part-time job off campus, if they were allowed to do that, who stepped in. In some cases, they were adopted and taken in and were helped. One man said that the guy who he worked for took him down to A&M and said, you know, let me take you down here and, you know, I'll try to help you get into college. Well, if you were in the Waco State home, it was a state school, a state home, you were sent to college for free. You got free tuition, and expenses were paid. You were awarded the state till you were 21. And so education for some superintendents was really encouraged, and they would make arrangements for some of the outstanding students to get scholarships. And a lot of them have college degrees and very successful careers. So you can intervene, you can make a difference if you just pick one child and say, I'm going to help this child. But if we don't continue programs that provide health care, that provide support for families to stay together, then you will have kids being dropped off at juvenile facilities. And sometimes there are deadbeat parents. But again, you have to look at, well, how did that happen? You know, where was the cycle that began there? And at some point, you have to say, I'm going to stop this cycle. I'm going to stop this cycle of poverty. And frankly, it becomes a cycle of despair, where children who grow up in poverty think that college is not an option to them. They don't see a future out of that neighborhood.
One of the points that I found especially interesting, and I think your book is so well done, the We Were Not Orphans, this wasn't an orphanage per se. And I think in many people's minds that would be a different classification. An orphanage is about kids that have no one at all, and many of them were not unlike the Waco State Home. What I found fascinating in the research was the lack of accountability for those that were in charge of this, those that knew about things that were going on that weren't doing anything about it. What was it? What did it take to finally bring to the attention of, you might say, the courts, to recognize that there had to be an accountability? I mean, we're talking about a facility that had been built a long time ago, and it was actually a farm, which was healthy because it kept the kids busy. But the thing is, there was not the accountability, even though there were records in file that you found that had been saved, showing that there had been complaints, that there had been all kinds of evidence. Why is it that that was such a challenge?
Well, it happens so often with state government, and I guess probably the federal government, any kind of government, where you had the Board of Control was responsible for oversight of the home. The Board of Control was appointed by the governor. In some cases, the governor chose the superintendent of the home. He said to the board, this family, and this is one of the worst, most abusive superintendents the home had was for 2 years. This was a deadbeat man who came from a wealthy family. His family donated to the governor, helped get him elected, and said, find a job for our deadbeat son. So he had no experience with children. So he thought, well, let's just put him there because these kids don't matter. So he made him the superintendent of the Waco State Home. This man, who was wealthy, actually opened the envelopes from struggling families who would scrape together a dollar or two or $5 to send their kids. He pocketed the money and tossed the letters and allowed all kinds of sexual and physical abuse of the kids. So in this particular case, this is one case of a political appointment, basically, and a board of control that was also appointed by the governor. So nobody, it took 2 years to fire this guy, and tons of people were coming to the board of control and saying, here, look, go talk to the kids, go see the kids. So they went, there are these secret hearings, it's in the back, in the epilogue of the book, and kids testified, and they were asked to open their shirts, pull down their drawers so they could inspect their butts that were with bloody and cuts and bruises, little girls even. And even after this, even after the Board of Control and a legislator and a representative, they said, let's hold this in private. We don't want a grand jury investigation, the media to get wind of this. Even after all this, it took 2 years to fire this guy. And even after the kids testified and he said, the Board of Control chairman said, to the kids, send me your letters. Tell me what's going on. If you're harmed, and so this little boy writes a letter and says to my best friend. He says to the Board of Control, and he signs it. Your pal. This is our secret. Please don't give me away. Well, that letter was sent to the superintendent, and the superintendent ordered the kid beaten again, and was threatened. They were threatening him to send him to the reformatory, and I do not know what happened to that little boy. I only know that what happened with the subsequent beatings and his letter. But when you run into a situation where the staff is also afraid, if there was no single staff in all the documents I have, there was not a single staff member who complained to the Board of Control who kept their job, not one.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone who talked was eventually fired. And so Mrs. Legg, the favorite, beloved teacher, when I found her tape and her voice saying, well, I refused to go down to Austin to the Board of Control and complain about Mr. Weebush. I had to be loyal to him because he gave me my job. And, oh, well, he only lasted for 2 years, so I guess too much harm wasn't done. Why do you say too much harm wasn't done when I know that one of the boys during that time who testified and was beaten so many times because of that he ran away. He was found on the streets in Dallas stealing food. They wrote the Waco State Home and said, we've got so-and-so here. He says he's from the Waco State Home. What do we do? What do you want us to do? Send him back? You want to come get him? And the superintendent answered, he's a bad kid. Send him to Gatesville. He ended up in Gatesville, and then he ended up in the Huntsville prison, which is death row in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the fear that was there in terms of people saw what happened if you talked. And so Mrs. Legg thought, well, I needed to stay here, even though I didn't, you know, eventually the man was fired. But if I stay here, I can help. I can do what little that I can. I'll do what I can do. You know, some would say, well, she was still okay. For me, maybe my standards are a little too high, but I felt that she had been there so long, and she had more power than she thought. And I think that's a lesson to all of us. We think as an individual that we don't have power to speak up, but we do. Because I think you find if somebody's terribly abusive, other people are going to find out and other people will know. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I always believe, of course, I'm a soapbox person, but I always believe that you have a responsibility if you see a child or someone vulnerable being abused. You have a responsibility, no matter what the cost is, to do something about it. I think you just do not let those things happen and walk away and turn your head. I just don't think that's the right thing to do.
Sherry, your book is a very powerful one. And again, because of what I have been made aware of that is happening in today's world, problems like this, having children that are going to need to have accommodations and keeping environments so that they are going to be productive, so that they realize that they do have a chance in life to be able to have successful lives. Life can be really, really tough, and I think your book gives a tremendous insight into what we need to be aware of. More than that, it talks about the resiliency of the spirit of the children and the adults that they ended up becoming. I think you presented these stories in a powerful way. What is your website that people can go to find out more about this book, We Are Not Orphans, the stories from the Waco State Home, so they can even look at their own environments and what they might be able to be a part of?
Well, it's www.wewerenotorphans.com. And there is a link, or many links, to nonprofit, wonderful organizations that are helping prevent abuse of children. If someone wants to get involved, or if they want to know what to do if they see abuse, you're supposed to. I understand that it's illegal in many states. If you witness abuse and you don't report it to the authorities, that's actually you're breaking the law. That's kind of an interesting thing. But also on the website, we have a segment, Share Your Stories. And we're getting stories every day from people who are adults now, who grew up in other homes around the country, as well as other homes here in Texas, and those who grew up in the Waco State Home who have horrific stories of abuse, who said, you know, I didn't want to go to the Alumni Association because I was so angry about what happened to me there. I wish I had known, will you do a second book? And the answer is no, I will probably not do a second book. But we do have an opportunity for anyone who is not in the first book who wants to share a story, or from any home. It's very interesting, some of the accounts that we're getting of just how, you know, again, similar attitudes of resilience. But we're getting more. Those who chose to do the book were probably among the more successful from the home in terms of their mm-hmm. lives turning out okay. We're getting on the website now and letters from and phone calls from people who have led very damaged lives and are very angry. I mean, there, some of them are even talking about, can we file a class action suit against the state for the damage that was done to us, for our childhoods that we can never recover? And so, you know, I don't know. It is possible, but it's not something that, I mean, my clients are the state of Texas. You know, we do all this public education and work with many programs for our abused children. And so I would not ever want to be in a position of encouraging the alumni to file a lawsuit. But certainly, I think if some felt that they wanted to do that, that is certainly their prerogative to do it.
Well, Sherry, the book is a fascinating expose. It is very well done. It is done with an openness and a clarity that I think serves anyone in today's world well. It is something that talks about the past, that's true, but it has a very strong relationship even to the present, especially with the economic difficulties that our nation as a whole is experiencing. Sherry Matthews has been my guest today. We Were Not Orphans is the title of her book. It's loaded with photographs, all kinds of information. It is a very insightful and provocative read, and it will touch your heart and mind in a very special way. Sherry, I want to thank you for being my guest today. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And telephone lines are now open if you would like to chat with me today. Here is the toll-free worldwide telephone number of 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. In fact, we've got a caller on the line waiting, so why don't we just show you how we do it here on the Donna Sebo Show. And again, if you want to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. Caller, welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hello, my name is Robert. I'm calling from Tacoma.
Well, Tacoma, you're in my neck of the woods.
Yes.
Hey, Robert, we need to do a sundance. Here in the Pacific Northwest, yesterday we had an absolutely gorgeous day. We need to beat our tom-toms and talk to the sun god and tell him to get his act together and send us some more golden Z's. I'll tell you what, we need it here.
Yes.
I'm with you. Yeah. So we've just got to put in more appeal. Yes, well, let me give you some information first, Robert. The first thing I am looking at, and it's disturbing me, I am seeing you having some bouts of dizziness. Now, it doesn't happen where it's so severe that you'd lose your balance, but it has to do with your inner ear and the way the brain is sending signals to your eyes. So there's two things I'd like you to be aware of. Number one, I want you to have your eyes checked. I think that you may need some glasses, and there may need to be just a slight adjustment in a lens. Number two, I want you to be alert regarding any sinus infection, a cold, something that could affect the inner ear. That is what could have this discomfort of dizziness come in. And if you notice it, ask yourself, am I having a problem with my sinuses? What's going on here? So those are the two things that I'm seeing, because I'm looking at you fatigued if you tried to do a lot of reading, and that's where the eyes come in, the adjustment of lenses and or work on a computer. So I want you to be aware of those two factors and take a proactive approach with them. It can keep you from having what I would consider some severe spells with dizziness. What was your question for me, Robert?
Oh, thank you. And that was 100% correct.
Oh, really? Are you having dizziness right now?
Yes. Everything you said is exactly right.
Okay. I want you to take care of this. Please do not ignore it.
Okay. I have a question. I'd like to know if I father a child with a woman in the entertainment world.
The answer is yes, you did, but I'm also looking at a miscarriage.
Okay. And
so,
just something about the outlook of this everyday future?
Well, be specific. Give me a specific thing that you'd like to ask.
Well,
about.
In money.
Well, I'll tell you what, Robert, you need to learn how to work with money. You could be given, and please don't take this in the wrong way, you could be given $1 million today, and in 6 months it would be gone. You
yes.
need to get some basic education. You need to be able to find someone who would be a good educator for you regarding money. And part of the challenge that I'm seeing with you comes from something that affected you many years ago. And I would use the term of having hard times, but you never understood that money is a medium of exchange. In and of itself, it has no value. But if you can, let's say, acquire some capital gain, that gives you the freedom to do some of the things you want to do. So money has to be leveraged so that you can utilize it effectively in your life, and you want to have a positioning of financial independence. But you need to have some good, solid, basic understanding of this. Otherwise, you're never, ever, even in your older years, going to feel like you're going to be able to be on top of things. So you need a good financial mentor that you can work with, that will teach you some basics, and that you can go in and interact with so that you can plan accordingly. Because you've had a lot of money come into your hands at different times, and it's gone away just as quickly.
Thank you.
You are very welcome, Robert. Thank you for calling in.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebel. I want you to know, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, 888-815-9756 is the telephone number to call into. And if you're wanting to know about the guests coming up this month, the listing is all on bbs.com, bbsradio.com. So you can go into show information. You'll find the listing of all the guests that are going to be coming up this month. Also, my newsletter went out. And if you'd like to get a copy of the newsletter, just go into my website, DelphiInternational.com, and you will find the newsletter in its entirety right there up on my website. And by the way, for those of you that are listening in Alaska, I'm going to be up in Fairbanks and Anchorage next week. I'm going to be in Fairbanks the 9th through the 11th, and then from the 12th through the 15th in Anchorage. So if you want to meet with me and schedule an appointment, you can do that. The Common Touch, that's the title of the book I'm going to be sharing with you tomorrow. Madison Harper is my guest. Now, this is a true story that was given to Madison Harper. It's a very, very, I'll use the term spiritual experience that an individual went through that changed their lives dramatically. This person gave Madison the opportunity to publish this. Also, during this week, we're going to be talking, Mother's Day is coming up, oh yes, that big day for all the ladies in the world, and we're going to be talking about a mom, or with a mom, Carolyn Wentz, on Wednesday, and the title of her book is really unreal, A Mother is a Mother Unless She's Earth Vomit. Now, you're going to listen to that, you're going to say, who came up with that title? Carolyn did, and it was all inspired by her teenage kids. So we're going to be talking about teenagers. Carolyn is quite an accomplished woman on so many levels. We'll be finding out that as well. And then Dancing with the Midwives. Anne Faison talks about women dealing with grief. This book is incredibly beautiful. Anne is an outstanding artist. And with her poetry, she has art that is just exquisitely beautiful to look at. And then Danny Cahill. We're going to be talking about Harper's Rules. How can you empower yourself, your life, your actions, your thinking? Well, Danny is going to be sharing some of that with us. So we've got a dynamic lineup for the whole month, actually. So if you're ever interested, go in and check on my website. Get the newsletter. You'll find the button off to the left of your screen. Tap on that. And if you want to go in to archive any of the, or and check in the archives with any of the other newsletters from the past, feel free to do that. So you will have that as well as having his listing here with a brief write-up right here on bbsradio.com. All right, I wanted to share some stories with you today. And also, I had a quote. Let's dig this out here. I really find that wisdom doesn't really know age. You can have someone that's written a quote hundreds of years ago that has just as much validity today. It seems as if the human nature may change its costumes. We might not be running around in bear skins and carrying clubs, which I don't know that that's too close to reality anyway, but regardless of the era, wisdom stands true, stands tall, because that's just the way it is. George Matthew Adams wrote some words that I really liked. He said, the one reason why men and women lose their heads so often is that they use them so little. It is the same with everything. If we have anything that is valuable, it must be put to some sort of use. If a man's muscles are neglected, he soon has none, or rather none, worth mentioning. The more the mind is used, the more flexible it becomes, and the more it takes upon itself new interests. And that is so very important. Our minds, just like our bodies, have to be exercised. The joy of reading has been a gift that I have been able to utilize in my life, and of course, with this daily show, it is an extremely important part of my life. What I find is invaluable is that when you're willing to read, it's okay to listen to news broadcasts. I was having a discussion with someone today about some news that had been put out on the airwaves, and I said, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes. You are getting, in many instances, a choreography of what this is we're supposed to assume is all the truth. How do we know? When are we going to be taught to question things? Why is it that in so many arenas you are not to question? This is not good. I don't care whether it's science, it's medicine. It doesn't, mechanics, it doesn't make any difference. When you learn to question, when you learn to examine, when you learn that you have a right of choice, makes the playing field much different. That is where you as an individual can make decisions that are going to empower you and your life in a way and manner that's going to allow you to be comfortable in your own skin. If you don't question, if you don't challenge, if you don't examine, how are you ever going to learn how to do it? You know, children do this automatically. And then we're indoctrinated to a degree. I don't care what culture we come from. what our environments are, good, bad, or indifferent. But somewhere along the line, we need to recognize that we've been given the minds to be able to think. Many times children are indoctrinated in such a way that they don't know any difference. I can look at my own life when I was growing up. My world was really a very small one. Nowhere close to the expansiveness of what I have today. The expansiveness I have today came because I chose to have that. I was willing to step into waters of knowledge, education, that believe it or not are available to everybody, but that few want to explore. That's me. But I had to learn how to do it because that went against everything I was taught. So when I think of the experiences of the author, Sherry Matthews, that I had today, her research into an environment that took place so many years ago, that was in place until the 70s, how many questions were posed? Times were difficult. How many things could have been done differently? It's easy in hindsight to look back and say this should have been done. But you also have to remember the time and the era. Many people would not challenge. Today, because of communication, we are able to challenge, maybe a little bit more effectively. The lies are also just as blatant. So we must be willing to question. We must be willing to examine. We must be willing to explore, look at different options. We are not stuck. We need to remember the minds that we have are gifts to be expanded, to be utilized, and to be exercised. Enjoy the process. Donna Sebo here. We're going to take a break for just a moment. And then when we come back, I'm going to talk about an incredible lady who found that laughter is really the best medicine. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Sebo, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello and welcome back. Let's go to our next caller on the show. And if you want to call in and chat with me, 888-815-9756. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial. And where are you calling in from?
Oh, yes. Is this Donna? This is Tommy in Tennessee. Can you hear me?
Hi, Tommy. Where are you in Tennessee?
Oh, in the middle part of the state, just dodging tornadoes.
I was going to ask you, is Nashville getting hit with tornadoes, or are they being blessed this year by not being smacked with some?
Well, I'm not right there, but it's a little tumultuous, let's say, like life, anyway.
Well, that's the truth. No, you were hit so hard last week.
I was pretty concerned last week. I got dressed and I sat there and watched the laser light show come in for about 3 hours, and I said, I got to be ready.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway.
Wow. Well, Tommy, let me just give you some information right off the bat. I'm glad you're okay, and I really hope that your whole environment is safe and sound.
Sure, thanks. I wasn't calling about that, but anyway, go ahead.
No, that's all right. Tommy, the first thing that's coming into my mind is you've got some legal documents that you need to upgrade. You need to update and upgrade. Now, I'm not sure exactly what this is relating to, but it's apparently something that's been on your mind, and I think you are well advised to just pay attention to what your instincts are telling you and get those documents in order. Also, there needs to be a place where you can readily get to certain documents if you need them quickly. And I'm looking at what appears to be a safe that I think you are going to put in a floor or put someplace, and it's down. To me, it's down in the ground. And as I'm watching this, I'm seeing you putting that and some other documents in this safe environment. And I think that that is very, very wise. Now, you've got a lot on your plate right now, and you've got to pay attention to details. Don't ignore the details. You must pay attention to those details. This year is going to be a very hard working year for you. Excuse me. Sorry, I had a bit of a frog in my throat there. This is going to be a very hard working year for you. So I want you to, again, pay attention to the little things, get stuff in order, and if you need to really have somebody help you with some of the clutter that you wanted to get rid of, do that. But go ahead and take care of what you need to take care of, because you're setting up preparation this year for a major shift in your life in 2012, and you're really doing a lot of thinking about this. So take care of the small stuff, and you'll be able to make the big steps that you want by next year. What would you like to ask me, Tommy?
Well, I was, thank you for that well-taken suggestions there. I appreciate that. I was more like interested in commenting on some things you were just speaking about a few minutes ago, if that's okay.
That's perfectly all right with me.
Yeah, I really liked what you were saying there, and I was just hoping to clarify the thought there when I was thinking, because you were touching on some things there about and also what you were telling me about the details and so on, is that the matrix of illusion that we're all in here, that we grew up into, that we were born into, is so tremendous that it's hard. Everything appears through the five senses, to feel, taste, touch, and smell, all real.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to wrap our minds around the fact that it's an illusion. And how could that be? Well, that the five-sense reality construct is constantly confirming this with our friends and our environment. And my idea is that it's hard for people to do is to pull back from it. It's hard to stop it, but if you could stop the wheel, the rat wheel of illusion, then you could see the other side of it so that you could know what to do about it. And this is what I've sort of done in a way, and still harmonize with the matrix, because you don't want to fight it, but to harmonize with it and pull back and rethink things so that you could, because everything is all wrong the way we were taught and trained, and everything is in reverse of what we were taught and trained to think it is, and it's hard to really think that way if we're all constantly human doings instead of human beings. And that's the problem, is that nobody will stop, not many people will stop the matrix of illusion in order to see the other side of midnight to know what to do about it. Because it's just grabbing us at every breath you take and every move you make. And this is why the shaman goes in the woods, and the history is rife with killing off all the indigenous cultures and peoples and civilizations because they had it right.
Yes. Tommy, I'm sorry. I'm interested in what you have to say, and feel free to call back another time, but I'm out of time. I've got to go.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Oh, that's perfectly all right, Tommy. I've got to go. And thank you so much. I appreciate your thoughts. And it's something. Thank you for being a listener. And, gee whiz, I've got to say goodbye. And for those of you listening, tomorrow we are going to be talking about the common touch. This is a true story. Hope you can join me. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Wherever you are, be safe, be happy, and don't forget to think. This is Donna Sebo. We'll talk with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.